Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Dr. Bryce Edwards from Victoria University. Are you there, mate?
Yes, hi, Johnny.
How's it going?
Yes, very sunny and spring-like in Wellington at the moment, and not a huge amount of things going on in politics, but, you know, things turn over, there's scandals and there's still, you know, intrigue and things. That's what Wellington's about.
Yes. Now, the first story we're going to cover off this morning is National MP Andrew Bailey and some comments he made during a business visit. Could you just first off elaborate on the circumstances surrounding Andrew Bailey's comments during the business visit, and what have we learned from the complainant's perspective?
Sure. I mean, Andrew Bailey isn't a particularly prominent member of the coalition cabinet, but he's the small business and manufacturing minister, and he was on a visit to Marlborough. I think he was visiting a winery, he had some interactions with one of the winery staff, and we know it happened, and both sides of the party sort of agree that there was an unfortunate word spoken, but there's a bit of disagreement about exactly what those were. The complainant says that that Andrew Bailey called him a loser, and so people are calling it Losergate because it's turned into a bit of a scandal. And he told him, apparently Andrew Bailey told the worker to take some wine and F off. And, you know, apparently he belittled the worker, and the worker, you know, has complained saying that he thought Andrew Bailey was intoxicated and that he was, you know, not behaving to the standards that you'd expect of a minister of the Crown. And Bailey has since apologised and said he was trying to be light-hearted and it was banter. He denies using explicit language. He denies being drunk. But, yeah, it's certainly raised questions about that minister, and there's been, you know, some half-hearted apologies, but some people still aren't satisfied that that's enough.
Would you say that Christopher Luxon's stance on Bailey's action has been somewhat of a defence, and how does that reflect upon his leadership style, and what does it say about Luxon's approach to accountability?
Yeah, look, that's the damaging part of this, because Andrew Bailey's not a big player in this government, but Luxon's had to apologise on his behalf. He's tried to dismiss it as not being a big deal. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, he should have been tougher. He has missed his chance to sort of show that he's not putting up with, unethical behaviour by his ministers. And critics have said that this just shows that National is still the party of the kind of entitled snobs, that are out of touch with workers, that they, they're not really a serious and, you know, ethical sort of political party, I guess. So I think it hasn't been Luxon's, his best moment, but it's still a question about how many people are really bothered by this, and, you know, whether some people will just think, well, this is a storm in a teacup, and, we can't just rely on, complaints from some people. We don't really know that this was something so significant that the minister should have been fired or resigned over.
Do you think there has been significant public response to this one? Has there been much kicked up?
Hard to know. Look, I don't think there's been any polls to show how much reach this has had, and I think we can be certain that those that already dislike this government will see this as further proof of why this government's bad. Those that love this government won't think it's a big thing. So really, it's just those swing voters that it'll be interesting to know whether this thinks, whether they see this government as a bit less kind of likeable and reliable, really.
How does the situation compare to like past scandals within the National Party, such as Aaron Gilmore's resignation?
The Aaron Gilmore one's a really good parallel, because it was one back in, it was about 10 years ago when John Key was the Prime Minister. And again, that gave off the same sort of vibes of this kind of old-fashioned Tory party of, snobs that think they're better than everyone else. So Aaron Gilmore was at a National Party regional conference in Hamner in the South Island. He got drunk. The waiter was refusing to serve him more alcohol, and allegedly Aaron Gilmore, said, "Don't you know who I am? I could get you fired," and all sorts of things like that. And John Key was really unhappy with it as Prime Minister and leader of the party, and essentially pushed him out of Parliament, made him resign. And it was seen as being, John Key really showing that he has strong standards, high standards.
Yes. Yeah. What do you reckon is next for Andrew Bailey? Do you think he's going to weather this little storm, or do you think that he could face further repercussions?
It's dampened his career prospects, that's for sure. But people on the inside say that he's a hard worker and that he gets things done, and that he'll just go to ground now and continue to work hard on his portfolios, and will try to make people forget about this by being a good politician. But we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, on to capital gains tax. We've had recent polls with public showing support for capital gains tax in some form or shape.
Yeah, this is really interesting because the Labor Party has been advocating a capital gains tax on and off for the last sort of 10 years, and of course, infamously, Jacinda Ardern, when she was Prime Minister, and then Chris Hopkins, when he was Prime Minister, decided that, we're ruling it out, never, we're not going to have a capital gains tax. But there's a number of people in the Labor Party that are still really wanting to have that debate, and are very keen on tax reform, particularly on the left of the party. And Barbara Edmonds, the new finance spokesperson for Labor, is pushing for this as well. So, and interestingly enough, I think there's some people on the right and in business that are also seeing the kind of writing on the wall, if you like, and think it is time for a capital gains tax. And so the public, seem to be slowly being won over to this idea. And so we had a poll out this week from the market research group Ipsos that it asked lots of separate questions about capital gains tax. It asked the public, would you be open to a capital gains tax on investment property? Would you be open to a capital gains tax on the family home? And it was different levels of support. So when it was on the family home, it was very unpopular. When it was on investment properties, that was, up to 57% support, so majority. And so this was reported, though, I think, not very accurately, because RNZ and the Herald just lumped all the support together and tried to come up with this figure of two-thirds of people supporting it, but it wasn't quite robust. The highest for any one category was 57%. Nonetheless, it does show that I think there is going to be a lot more debate, and maybe even some of the parties of the right might end up throwing in their towel on their opposition to having some sort of tax reform.
So do you manage to dig in deep enough to figure out if the survey revealed any significant demographic trends or differences in support for capital gains tax across age groups or regions?
No, not in this poll. It showed that people definitely are more favourable to the capital gains tax when it applies to the wealthy, when it applies to business owners, landlords and so forth. So you can expect that the people that might be more favourable are more working class, poorer, you know, and the people opposed might be those business people and landlords. But no, I don't think we can take any other demographic conclusions from it.
Okay, on to the Ministry of Health. There's been a bit of a conflict of interest involving a Labor MP's relative being in the Ministry of Health and working on tobacco law reform with Casey Costello. Could you elaborate on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is an important one, I think, because tobacco and, you know, smoking reforms have been one of the more contentious parts of this current government, and Casey Costello has been the Associate Minister for Health and New Zealand First MP that's really been pushing this. And, you know, there's been lots of accusations, including from myself, about her conflicts of interest and her integrity over this. But now the boot's on the other foot, because it turns out that Aisha Verrill, now she's the Labour Party spokesperson on this, and she's been going very hard against Casey Costello on this. Her sister-in-law works for the Ministry of Health, and her sister-in-law is, you know, one of the officials that's been, you know, providing information and dealing with the minister on this. And so, you know, suddenly this has come out, I think about a week ago, with Winston Peters raising this in Parliament, saying that this is a conflict of interest, and that, you know, that the government weren't informed about this. And so I think we have to be clear that, you know, there's nothing that the actual sister-in-law has done wrong, and there's nothing that Aisha Verrill has necessarily done wrong, but that the Ministry of Health, the actual officials that manage this public servant, perhaps have, because they didn't disclose to Casey Costello that it was Aisha Verrill's sister-in-law, you know, working on this. And so they've apologised now to the minister and said, well, yeah, we should have told you that it was Aisha Verrill's sister-in-law. And the sister-in-law did actually inform her bosses that, you know, I have this potential conflict of interest, and it was the bosses that kind of didn't act on that.
Mm. Do you think, when, I know this is kind of a unique example because they're talking about smoking policy and tobacco and stuff like that, do you think there is a need for extra transparency when policy is being developed around this sort of stuff, especially when the industry has got such a checkered past?
Oh, absolutely. New Zealand has a very complacent attitude to these policy processes, and the public really know very little about what's going on behind the scenes. And yes, Casey Costello's reforms have been entirely opaque, and we know that her, or at least her party, New Zealand First, has very close links with lobbyists from tobacco companies. And we've seen some of the processes that have been brought out by Official Information Act requests that show just how questionable the process has been, and we just don't know where the advice has been coming from that's informed what they've been doing. And no doubt, you know, a lot of these reforms have benefited the tobacco companies, especially when they've lowered tax on certain tobacco products, etc. So, yeah, I think we do need to see
this a bit more scrutiny. And, I mean, one last question for you, Bryce. How do you assess Winston Peters' approach to exposing this conflict of interest? And do you think his tactics are appropriate for, you know, political debate?
Oh, that's a tough one. sorry, Johnny, I'm just trying to think about that one. I mean, I think he used parliamentary privilege. He brought this out in the debating chamber, and I do think we should expect politicians to bring these things out, make the public informed of these things. But yeah, he was possibly going into a sort of grey area when he's bringing up public servants that are anonymous and can't really fight back and can't really clear their names. So yeah, it's a bit of a grey area, that one, in my view.
All right. Hey, Bryce, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, Johnny.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.